welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Welcome to the Syosset Public Library's podcast, Turn the Page. I'm Sharon Long, and I'm the young adult librarian here. Today with us, I have my coworker, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
I would. I'm Jessica, and I am the community engagement specialist at Syosset Public Library.
Yes, and today we are super excited because we are able to welcome New York Times bestselling author and William C. Morris Award finalist, and he is also the May cover model of Kirkus Reviews. So we have our author today, Mr. David Yoon. Thank you so much.
Hello, it's so nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So yeah, so we were just saying before Jessica popped on, what a busy week this is for you. And congratulations on your book, Version Zero, coming out this week. Did it just come out yesterday?
It just came out yesterday, yeah.
So for listeners, because this is going to be released in a few weeks, what day is today? Just so people know.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, today's Wednesday. Wednesday, May 26th, and the book came out yesterday, May 25th.
So by the time you are listening to this, you should hit pause and run to your library or run to your local bookshop or wherever books are, yes, and grab it, because you're going to want to read this book. It is so good.
Oh, it is so good.
Thanks, you guys.
So it's, now that you have brilliant. Unpaused, yeah. We're back to listening, and you have welcome version back. Zero you have in your hand. Welcome back.
Exactly. So I guess the big question, right, is about the internet, and is it worth it? Is the internet worth it, David? Why are we doing this to ourselves?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's sort of the story of the book. Is, you know, it's about this guy Max, and he's a 20-something brilliant tech entrepreneur, and he wants to be like the next Steve Jobs. And he works for this huge social media company, discovers that they're doing some pretty shady stuff with user data, and he decides to blow the whistle, because this is an idealistic kid. He really thinks that like technology can make the world a better place. But as soon as he blows the whistle, he is immediately fired. And then he's blacklisted from the whole industry. And so he's got this huge crisis of faith in the technology that he used to believe in so much. And he decides to exact revenge on the big five tech companies for their sins against humanity through this series of escalating hacks that get crazier and crazier as they go along. And so like, it was inspired by my own experience. I used to work in tech for like 13 years as a user experience person. And I got to see a lot about how the internet sausage is made, and it's not pretty. There's a lot that we give up in order to be able to use technology. And I wanted to write a story that was centered around that issue.
So the big five in your book, could you tell us a little bit about each one?
I just made up like companies because I didn't want to horribly date the book, you know.
Right. Well, that's the smart thing, though. It didn't, but you could also sort of tell where the
inspiration
was. For instance, Ren, which is the company that Max works for, it seems to be across. Clearly Twitter, because Ren. As
that's
in the
what
bird.
I thought with the bird, bird. And Twitter. Yeah. Okay.
But it sounded like it had maybe a little bit of Facebook in it, maybe a little bit.
I took different companies like Airbnb and Lyft and whatever, and I just sort of mashed them up.
Airlift, because, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Airlift. Because writing about technology is really hard. You know, things change so fast, and publishing cycles are really long. By the time your book comes out, if you're writing about Snapchat, it's kind of out of date already, you know?
Right.
Once the moms get on it, nobody wants to deal with it anymore.
Oh, yeah. Like, the moms are going to get on TikTok pretty
soon.
The moms
are going to get on TikTok, and that's going to be it for TikTok.
Totally.
But then there's also, so there's knowned, and that was one Sharon and I were talking about. Mm. We'll get into the creator, I guess, a little bit later with that. But is knowned supposed to be like 4chan and Reddit mushed together?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It's like smashed together. And mm-hmm. and I did this because, I mean, I'm a big Mac nerd and I follow Mac rumors mm-hmm. and whatever. And they talk about losing the traditional home button on the iPhone. And I'm like, the home button is still there, man. Like the home button was just invented like 10 years ago. It's just not that old. So, I mean, the way we talk about technology is so like anti-historical, ahistorical. Where time is really, really compressed. And we say something is old when it's really just a few years old. And so I was like, how do I write about technology? How am I going to write a story about it? And so I decided to set it way back in 2018 and almost write it like it's a piece of historical fiction. So I have these asides in the book where I define things like what does viral mean? And what does it mean to crowdsource stuff? Just so that it gives it the appropriate psychic distance. And also hopefully you can read it maybe 10 years from now or 20 years from now and still get that strange dystopian feeling, because it is kind of a dystopia that we're living in.
I really enjoyed that like literary element that you used with making it seem like you're almost like a guidebook to what technology, what things were like then, you know.
I call those my David Attenborough moments. Jumps in with the narration.
Right. No. And I also, the way that you kind of wove together, there were some interviews throughout. It wasn't just a straight, novel format. It kind of, you mixed it up a little bit with excerpts from different things and, I don't know. I found that to be a nice twist on everything too.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about, so I know as a young adult author, I've enjoyed reading, Frankly in Love was fantastic. And
oh, thank you.
Super Fake Love Song. I just finished this week because I wanted to have it finished before we spoke. And how is it different writing for adults? Like, was this something that you've always wanted to do? I mean, how did you sort of, start with young adult, move into adult?
Well, when I was in writing school, we had to make our theses and they were short story collections. And so you had to come up with like 12 short stories and put them in a book. And I just sort of found myself writing about what we'd call now middle grade. I don't know. I was just really interested in examining that age group and examining that part of my life. And so I really do believe that like you can learn, any age can learn from any other age something interesting about life. And so like I also vividly remember what it was like to be in high school. Like I still haven't forgotten. And as for like the difference between YA and adult, this is a point of debate between me and my wife, Nikki, Nicola Yoon, author of Everything, Everything, and The Sun is Also a Star, and yes. Forthcoming novel, Instructions for Dancing.
I can't wait to read that one. Yes.
It's, it's really good. It'll make you cry. Oh. but yeah, we talk a lot about the difference between YA and adult. And I think the thing we keep coming back to is YA is about hope and potential. Because you're at the start of, you're just learning how to be your own person at that age. And it's a really exciting time. When you're an adult, you've been through some stuff, you've seen some things. So it's not necessarily about hope. It's more about seeing things the way they are, unvarnished. And that can sometimes be a terrifying experience without any easy answers. And so I think that the internet is definitely, the jury's out for me on the internet. Like, is it good? Is it bad? Has it been worth it? I honestly don't know. Some days I'm like, no. Some days I'm like, well, I get to talk to people like you in the library and that's pretty cool. But then I'm like, Zoom routes all of its data through China and they're obligated to, to provide all their data to the government. And I know after working in tech, like nothing really gets deleted. It's just easier to flag it as disabled, but it's still there. So I don't know.
Yeah. So just talking about the love-hate relationship with technology, I had to say, like, you sort of do touch upon that in other books. It's not just version zero. That's sort of like, for example, in Super Fake Love Song, the way that there are some really positive things that technology bring to the story, like the whole YouTube DIY, like nerd forge type shows that they do, and how they connect that way with their viewers. And you know, there's a moment using one of those like Ring doorbells that captures a moment that
that was really important.
I don't want to give anything away, but you know, there's definitely you know, you weave some sort of reoccurring themes throughout some of you know, your books. And the other thing I want to talk about was about how all three books kind of talk about imposters in some sort of way or another.
Right. Yeah.
Right. So you got your fake band, you have a fake boyfriend, girlfriend, frankly in love. And then in your latest book, you do have this whole disconnect, this fake, you know, retreat that they create, all the hacking. There's a lot of imposters and what the kids would say, sus stuff happening, right?
Yeah.
So I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. You know, how is it writing that process when you're kind of, you know, trying to
I'm really interested in like the you that you there's a bunch of yous inside of you. There's the you that you want to be. There's the you that actually you, the one that you actually are. There's the one, there's a you that everyone thinks you should be. And how do you reconcile all those there? And sometimes there can be such enormous pressure to be the you that you think you should be, or that other people want you to be, that you put the real you aside. And I think, you know, tying it into sort of technology and social media, there's a lot of stuff we do that's just performative. It's just for presentation. There's a lot of there's tons of pretending on social media, and that muddies the water even further. It's sort of like, you know, who, if the internet were just so, like, if all the likes went away, one of the hacks in the book that Max and his gang of friends come up with is they turn off all the likes and just to see what'll happen. And it turns out that people, and it's something that I was thinking about, is that people have externalized their sense of self-worth and their need for validation so much that they have agreed to become a number, and not just become a number, but also really enjoy it. And this is particularly interesting for me, because in my generation, like, we used to, like, I grew up on a lot of punk and a lot of, like, you know, counterculture stuff. And we were like, we're not a number. You can't put us in the box. But here we are boxing ourselves in hashtags for easy findability, and really paying attention to our follower counts and our like counts, and not only paying attention to it, but really enjoying it and getting validation from it. Whether that validation is high quality or low quality, that's another topic, but we're doing it. And I find that fascinating.
I read this book right after finishing Imposter Syndrome by Kathy Wang. And it was,
psyched for that book. I haven't read it yet, but I'm psyched for it.
It's really good. It's an interesting book to precede this one, because it also deals with imposters and tech companies and that type of thing. So I loved your characters, your main trio plus Brayden. You have so there's Max, there's Akiko, who's like his childhood friend slash love interest, and then there's Shane, who is Akiko's forever boyfriend.
Right.
And Max is still friends with him, but also envious of him. And Shane is almost like, I guess, like the dad of the group, in the way that he's not immersed in technology the same way that Max and Akiko are.
And I love, like, Shane is, he's like a big human golden retriever, Labrador.
He really is.
He's simple, but so lovable and like totally loyal, and just doesn't, he like runs a pool cleaning service so he can work on his tan and he's happy. Whereas Max is always looking toward the horizon, you know, and Akiko is this brilliant programmer, and she and Max can connect on that level that she can't connect with Shane on. And then you mentioned Brayden too. Brayden is like the young kid who gets enlisted into the hacker group. And he is a digital native, and he grew up not knowing what life is like without the internet. In fact, if you're not on the internet, you're considered strange. They're all sort of enabled by this reclusive tech billionaire named Pilot, who comes out of hiding because he agrees with Max's mission. And he helped build this world that he now despises. And he has all these regrets, and he wants to atone for his own sins by joining Version Zero, which is the name of the hacker group, to join Max on his quest for vengeance and exposure, like exposing the companies.
You deal with not only hacker groups, which I suppose, I mean, most people know about Anonymous, which I don't think is as centralized as people thought it was. But you also deal with trolls and trolling culture.
Right.
And things like there's allusions to things like Gamergate. When you talk about things on the internet that are not positive. I mean, the last year I'll say, you know, I've had virtual lunch with long distant friends more than I have had like actual lunch with them in like when they lived in the area, which I know is kind of sad, but
yeah, that's very true.
It's a tool that I don't think any of us would have thought of using beforehand. But there's definitely like trolling culture and things like Gamergate and doxing. Those are all those are not great.
Yeah, they're not great. I mean, it's just sort of a natural. It's a natural thing that happens, like a natural phenomenon that happens, I think, when you take a bunch of people and you put them in an anonymous situation and then look away, you know. And it kind of reminds me of car traffic, actually. It's like when you get thousands of people, you put them in cars and they don't have faces or names anymore. And suddenly you have road rage. And, you know, on top of that, you give them tremendous power to go from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. That's tremendous power. And so you wind up with stuff like road rage. Like that's inhuman behavior. And I think the internet is really, really similar in that way. You can hide yourself. You can become anyone you want. And it gives even just like a single bad actor, outsized amplification, outsized power. I think like Q is a great example of how much power two people, I think it's father and son.
They'll pretend it's not, but it totally, yeah. No, it's not us, but really it's you. Everybody knows. It's not, I know. Come on, guys.
Come on, you guys, you know, it's you. Come on. But look at the power they had. They reached so many people. And the speed, so the 0 to 60 in 3 seconds on the internet is having one message be retweeted 10 million times overnight. And it's an experiment, honestly. I think like we don't quite know what we're doing. It moves way faster at a far bigger scale than our human brains are equipped to really handle. And the fact of the matter is, like, the internet wasn't really built to solve anything in particular. I mean, it was built in the 60s or whatever to make a distributed computer network that the Soviets could bomb. You know, they wanted to make a bomb-proof computer network. Okay, so they did that. But then beyond that, everything else has been, let's try this. Wouldn't it be cool if that, just sort of geeks experimenting. And then once you mix in billions of venture capitalists' money, then you've got this massive social experiment that is sort of conducted at the whims of very rich people on a massive scale. And I just think it's one of the most interesting times in human history because we don't actually know what we're doing. And we don't know what the long-term effects of these things are.
I'm curious. So this book was published before the whole NFT thing became huge.
Yeah.
Would you have added that in had that been?
I mean, sure. It's like a little detail. Like that there's common threads in technology that just kind of repeat themselves. And NFT is just one of them. It's the digital world pretending to be the physical world, which is ironic.
For our listeners, what that stands for, just for people who might
because not everybody knows or 100% understands.
Yeah,
the non-fungible token. Yeah, it's like you can gives like an animated GIF or whatever you want, really, any digital asset, a unique identifier, and then that identifier is validated by blockchain. And so it becomes its own unique digital object that you can buy at auction for like $10 million. And it's sort of the worst of both worlds. It's like you take the endless copyability of digital and you take that away. And then you take the sort of hyperinflated art market and you add that in. And so now you've got this massively scalable market for what is basically nothing. And at the same time, you're mining Bitcoin in order to process the transaction. And that has this huge effect on our environment because it turns out that Bitcoin and blockchain take energy. And it's one of the things that like, the main thing is like the technology and the internet are this weird desire to shed our bodies and become like the cloud, you know, just like become these abstract ghost-like creatures that don't need to mess with the muckety muck of like the physical world. We can be pure thought. But of course we know that especially blockchain is a great example, like that requires computers and electricity and storage and, you know, cooling and all that stuff. And it turns out that it's really bad for the environment because everything is finite.
I thought that was fascinating when Elon Musk said like Bitcoin, you know, mining. And I was just like, but what are we talking about here? And then like you explained, it takes up energy. And that's just, people don't think of it that way, you know? So it was kind of like, oh.
Yeah. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I one of the things that really drove me to write Version Zero was like, not just Max's character, and Max is also lovesick. I can't not write about love, you know, because I'm me. But also like I wanted people to think about the world of the internet and the world inside their phone screen is actually just, it's just silicon, electricity, and people, and a ton of money, all mixed together. And you think it's an abstract experience, but it's not. And there are people who are paying very close attention to what you're doing and also trying to strongly encourage you to engage in certain types of behavior. Like, are you on TikTok? Are you doing those like jump outfit changes because you want to, or because they're trending? And are they trending because they're trending, or that TikTok wants them to trend? And the fact that you can't really answer that question should be food for thought.
So the question Sharon and I had before this, and I know we kind of mentioned it earlier, the names of the CEOs.
Okay.
Is it just because?
Yeah.
Like, you know, they tend to have weird names. I mean, you have your, you know, like
Pilot Markham. Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was interesting. A lot of them have like nouns as part of their names, like Bill Gates, Steve Jobs. You've got Pilot, Friend, River. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Was there anything to that?
but then, because Sharon and I were talking about it.
We went really deep. So yes, explain.
Ready? Get into the weeds.
I love this.
Okay. This is a good one.
Linda Belinda. Is that supposed to be like, because her platform is like an echo chamber?
You are awesome. Thank you for getting that. That was exactly it.
Yes!
Oh my God. You're
high
so
five.
Great.
High
five. What was my take? I said that because it's like, just let the Lindas be Lindas, like let the boys be boys. But I liked your echo chamber one better. So
it was totally
win.
Like she was her own redundant self living in her own bubble.
It.
And so was known, you know, it's totally an echo chamber. And with his own logic and its own crazy rules. And yeah, it does exactly. You guys are so awesome. I love it.
And the way she was described was like a living, breathing, may I speak to your manager meme also,
yeah.
You know?
Totally. I just love stupid names. And like whenever I'm just out and about and I hear some really funny name, I'll just write it down, keep a list in my ongoing file. Like Jonah's friend. He's not your friend. what is it?
River Askew.
River Askew, like a crooked river.
Pilot. Like went off, yeah.
And Pilot is actually, he could be a pilot of a plane, but he can also be the pilot that guides you after death. And that's from some poem, I forget. Anyway.
But yeah, you do play around with names. You do in all your books. You got Frankly in Love,
yeah.
Sunny Day.
Wait.
I love the name.
Getting back to Pilot, he also was like, he created pilot, the pilot like the for everything. Yeah. He was there at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. And that was very much intentional too. No one reads closer than librarians, I swear to God.
We're awesome. Librarians are great. So was anybody Tom from MySpace? Tom.
Which I call him the last good guy of the internet is Tom from MySpace. He's got out of there, right?
I don't know anything about his personal life. He might so wonderful, but he was just like,
that's how he's perceived, I think, though.
Yeah, I mean, he left on a good note, I guess.
Right,
Before, like, I mean, MySpace seems so quaint now, and so just so old fashioned. But then you think about, like, I had a MySpace page. I had no idea what to do with it. And within days, I was getting spammed by like all kinds of shady people. And I was like, okay, I hate this. And I have no reason to be on here. So I never used it again.
Like those first AOL chat rooms, you know.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Talking to cool people. Oh, no, I'm noping out of this.
And if you're even remotely detectable as female, then it's even worse. Yep. You know, it was just terrible.
Yeah.
Like Steve Jobs. And yeah, it's... They become these archetypes, almost these godlike figures that we now call, like, we say things are Jobsian, you know, and his name was Jobs. He made a bunch of jobs. Right. It's just too perfect.
Well, that's like when I found out that Mesmerized had that, like, there was somebody whose last name was Mesmer who was involved in the spiritualist movement, and that's where that came from. That's a really interesting topic too.
I would like to first of all give a shout out to I love your wife's books, and I love the fact that you know, you guys, I wanted to talk about Joy Revolution, your new young adult imprint. So if you could just tell us a little bit about that would be fantastic.
I mean, Joy Revolution is basically a long time dream come true, because Nicola and I met in grad school at Emerson College, and we both quickly discovered over many drinks and whatever that we were romantic goobers and we love rom-coms, and we talked about how we were just never in any of these except as like a sidekick or a doctor in some tiny scene or whatever. And so we didn't know anything about publishing. We always wanted to make a short story contest, maybe fund it with our own money and just be like, you know, for people of color who wanted to write love stories. There's plenty of stories with people of color that are about like the struggle, you know, about racism and police brutality. And we need those struggles desperately, because if you forget about the struggle, that's not a good thing. But there's a whole other side that's not being told that explores just like the full breadth of humanity, you know. My example is always Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, which is just like these two stoner dudes who want to get hamburgers.
I love that movie so much.
That movie was like life giving to me, because it was like, finally, there's a guy who looks like me and he just wants to get burgers and on a road trip.
They very distinctly sidestep the story of Harold's the white coworkers he has meet up later, but it very much, like, most of those stories would be about their night, but this is very clearly like they're like, and we're gonna follow Harold and not them.
Yeah, totally. And it's like a glancing look at them, and then we go on there on Harold and Kumar's story. And that was always our ideal, was like joy, just joy, you know, falling in love, mixing it up, going crazy, getting stupid, and having fun. And so when, you know, fast forward to Nikki gets published, I gets published, and we ask Barbara Marcus at Random House Kids, she's the president there, and we're like, what about this? And she's like, write it up. We did. 2 weeks later, she was like, yes, we're in. And she's been an amazing ally this whole time. We've been getting tons of manuscripts, and it's a testament that there's all this pent up supply, these writers who just are bursting to tell their story. And it's like a super huge honor to be able to be there and tell these stories and give them a place to live. And it really is like, we didn't have to start our own book club. We just, you know, had to get published.
That's awesome. We can't wait to see. Yeah.
Yeah. There's three books on the roster now for 2022. We're going for like four, maybe hopefully five or something. But we're really excited about them.
That's so cool. And so can you tell us, are you working on anything right now? Like what's coming up for you? Like what's the next?
I should be writing, but I'm doing tour stuff.
Well, come on, you gotta enjoy. You gotta enjoy this moment. So
I totally fun. Am. I thought it's good. Really fun. But I just sold a book to Mark Tavani, who also published Version Zero. This next book is called City of Orange, which is about a guy who wakes up, the world has ended. It's post-apocalyptic, and he doesn't remember anything. All he knows is that he needs to find out what happened to his wife and kid, if they're still okay. And it's really kind of an intimate, quiet portrait of an apocalypse. It was super personal to me, and I'm really excited to see what people think about that. Nikki and I might be working on something together, co-authoring a book. We're like going to have a lot of fun with that. And there, I started outlining another, I have to choose. I have an YA project and an adult project, and I don't know which one to pick yet, but yeah, there's lots of writing happening.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, this was awesome.
Oh yeah.
You come back and talk to us about everything and anything. You were so much fun to talk to.
I'd be happy to. I mean, this is a lot of fun. I feel like we could just talk for hours about just our tech life and, absolutely. You know.
Okay. And this was Sharon with Turn the Page Podcast and my coworker, Jessica.
And our guest,
David Yoon. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being
so
here.
Much.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode.